Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Bernard Malekian, Director of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing, or COPS program, within U.S. Department of Justice. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. Technology has the capability of being a force multiplier. And to that end, Bernard, what are you doing to increase the capacity of law enforcement agencies to conduct data sharing? And more particularly, how are you helping them incorporate the use of technology in making their organizations more effective?
You know, that was an area that the COPS office was very deeply involved in for a number of years. We had a number of almost $1.3 billion passed through the COPS office over a 15-year period, specifically focused on technology grants and on the development of different things. Unfortunately, that came to an end in 2010 with the ban on earmarks because most of those technology projects were specifically focused. I've articulated that I've made some reference here today to the changes that are occurring in police work as a result of the economy. And one of those areas is technology. Probably the poster child for what's happened to the economy is Camden, New Jersey. One of the highest violent crime rates in the United States, and they had to laid off 47% of their police department. I mean, every officer with less than 14 years on the job lost their job. I mean, in one day. One of their responses, and they've got a very bright and energetic chief up there who's really, really doing amazing things under very difficult circumstances. But they attempted to use closed-circuit television cameras to help deploy their radio cars rather than doing random patrol. They're trying to monitor activities in public areas, things like taking reports online, particularly where there's no suspect information. I mean, that's just a couple of quick examples. While we don't have the technology grants anymore, we're certainly focused in the area of technical assistance of trying to bring awareness of different technologies or different projects or different funding streams, even if those funding streams are outside the COPS office, to the awareness of those agencies. That's kind of an example of what I meant when I said earlier that we wanted to be the voice of and for, law enforcement, the place to call. Even if we don't have the money, maybe we can point them in the right direction for some help.
Bernard, I know your office is often a gatherer and disseminator of best practices and a convener on issues of critical importance. Can you elaborate on the ways your office shares best practices and knowledge within the law enforcement community? And among other things, how does the COPS community policing web-based portal system factor into those efforts?
You know, the web-based portal system is really focused on grants and allowing the grantee to sort of monitor their grants, to actually move their funds in accordance with the parameters of their grant. We are in the process of bringing our website, our web page up to speed. To allow links to various agencies, not just in COPS, not even just within DOJ, but across the federal government. There are, in the Office of Justice Programs, for example, there are something called the Smart Police Initiative that is trying to also collect best practices. And so we're trying to become a place where the stories from our grants and how what they've impacted, what people may have learned, the reports from our community policing development, all of that will be linked on our website as well as links to other government agencies. One of the broader initiatives of the Justice Department is to try to create a best practices database where agencies who are trying to deal with a particular issue can come online and be put in touch with other agencies who may have dealt with the same problem. So that's the focus. It's a little distinct from the web portal, which is really a grant management tool.
Bernard, given the recent economic downturn, how has policing fundamentally changed over the last few years? And more importantly, what are you doing to assist local law enforcement agencies to meet the demands of this new fiscal reality?
Well, if I back up a little bit and talk about what's happened to the law enforcement agencies, we did it was originally what's called a data call. We were asked for some numbers for another government agency on how many police officers across the country had lost their jobs. And what we discovered was that there was no sort of annual data collection on that. So we undertook the development of a report that came out in the fall of last year. And what we learned, and we know these numbers are low, but at least 12,000 officers across the United States in the previous 24 months had been laid off, actually lost their jobs. An additional 35,000 positions had gone unfilled, meaning somebody retires or leaves the agency and they simply doesn't get funded. And then lastly, at least 28,000 officers had been furloughed for 40 hours or more in the preceding 12 months. So it's an enormous loss of capacity. The changes are going to occur, we believe, across sort of four fronts. One is a greater reliance on technology, which you alluded to earlier. Two is greater use of civilians, both as employees and as volunteers. There are a number of agencies that are doing some extraordinary things with civilian volunteers and with civilian employees. The third thing is an alternative response to non-emergency radio calls. And the last and probably most controversial is this regionalization and consolidation of departments in across a number of fronts. These things are occurring. These things aren't, we're not projecting. These things are underway. So we try in the COPS office, and I mentioned one of them, is to ensure that our hiring grants are really become problem grants, not budget fixing grants. But how can we help a community deal with a specific problem? And secondly, how can we provide technical assistance for agencies that are struggling with a particular issue, and how can we put them in touch with somebody else who may have dealt with a similar issue? All of this are convening, and I haven't even mentioned that part, but one of the things that we do fairly regularly is bring groups, law enforcement groups, around particular issues. For example, within the last year, and I think this is an area that receives not enough attention, but we brought in a group of police labor leaders to talk about what the impact of law enforcement on employee groups was and on their philosophy and how they're going to work together with management. Each of these convenings produces some kind of a report that goes back out to the field or gets reported at a national conference, either ours. Next week we'll be at the International Association of Chiefs of Police Conference. We're making presentations there. So all of that goes to make sure that the COPS office is sort of a continual source of information and assistance.
As a follow-on to that, in this current fiscal environment, as you described, it can no longer be business as usual. So focusing internally, what steps have you taken to minimize operational costs or seek out efficiencies and cost savings within your office?
Well, we've been focused on that for the last 3 years, even before the formal mandates came down. We have reduced our travel costs significantly and more efficiently. We have really streamlined our training costs. We have reduced our we came in this year, we reduced our budget about 9%, actually. And so we've really tried to recognize that we need to be stewards of federal money. We haven't added any new employees in over a year. We're in the process of doing an internal realignment to acknowledge where the workloads have gone and sort of redistribute that. I think we really have been one of the leaders in terms of following the president and the attorney general's mandates about achieving greater efficiencies.
In an effort to accomplish your mission, you've implemented the principles of effective COPS leadership and leadership principles in action. Would you tell us more about these efforts? And more importantly, how do they seek to increase your employees' leadership aptitude?
You know, one of the things that I think that this new economy is going to produce across the board is a fundamental shift away from sort of traditional top-down management. And I think empowering employees, I mean, the COPS leadership talks about empowering staff. It talks about effective communication. It talks about being fairness. There's about 7 points in all of that. And one of the things that we do, for example, we have regular internal climate surveys. And sometimes they reveal issues that are not particularly, you know, comfortable to deal with. You can float along. One of the things I've learned over the years about, you know, about being the leader of the organization is it doesn't take very much to convince yourself that everything's absolutely okay. And you have to take some steps to make sure you don't fall into the trap of actually believing that, because people are challenged. I mean, this is a very stressful time. I think one of the more unfortunate things is, as we have a discussion about what should the role of government be and all that kind of stuff, it has become somewhat fashionable to sort of bash the idea of the federal employees. You can talk about federal budgets without necessarily demeaning the people that do the work. And it's hard on people. I mean, it really is very hard on people. So trying to make sure that we stay abreast with what people's concerns are, sometimes it may be as little as seemingly mundane as, you know, we say that we want to ensure fairness, for example. And then you may find that you have some internal policy like parking spaces or something, you know, something not particularly dramatic, but it's very dramatic in an individual's life. And particularly if they don't think that you're ensuring fairness. So it's a continual sort of scrutiny of the values, number one, but not just are we saying them, but are we doing them?
Federal agency managers are now demonstrating measurable improvements in programs by integrating data-driven analytics in decision-making. Can you talk about how your office is leveraging the power of analytics to enhance your programs and the law enforcement community at large?
I think the CPSAT tool that you asked about earlier, I think, is an example of that. We're working very hard to make sure that the grant application itself actually becomes very informative for us and for trends. So we ask a lot of information about crime rates. We actually ask a lot of information about changes in local budgeting and about local problems, the local problem identification. And we're really trying very hard to make those applications a rich source of data. One of the changes that the COPS office has led the way in, many grant applications are narrative driven. You have a question and it requires a sort of a written articulated response. And then somebody has to assess that response and decide, you know, is it meaningful or not? We've tried to go with a data-driven approach to our application so that not only can we more meaningfully score the individual applicant, but we can take the grant data in the aggregate and hopefully draw some conclusions about what challenges are our stakeholders facing. I think that's probably one of the biggest areas that we've looked at. And secondly is developing this problem-solving metrics to actually look at how are our grants making a difference? How are they helping people in individual neighborhoods and communities?
So, Bernard, would you elaborate on the concept of police legitimacy?
We don't do that part through the grant process, although we do insist that the applications be done properly and that you do with the things with the money that you're saying you're doing and all that. And I have to say that we have almost no problems in that area. I think the question that you raise really goes to something that has emerged as a discussion point over the last couple of years, and that's this concept of what's called police legitimacy. And it really came out of some work by Professor Tom Tyler, who was at NYU and is now at Yale. He wrote a very fascinating book a couple of years ago called Why People Obey the Law. And one of the things that he found was that in interactions with the public, between the public and the police, it was less important what the outcome of that interaction was and more important about how that person felt they were treated. Some of my own work was in this area of what I call transactional inequality. And if I might take the liberty of telling a quick story for a minute, I was on active duty in Saudi Arabia in 1991 during Desert Storm. And towards the end of the deployment, we were allowed to go shopping in this downtown marketplace, and it was cordoned off by Saudi police. And somewhere along the line, I was taking a picture of the police station, and I found myself interacting, if you will, with the local police. Namely, they were yelling at me in Arabic and sticking guns in my face, and they were clearly not happy with me, but I wasn't clear why. And it turns out that it's illegal to take pictures of public buildings in Saudi Arabia. I didn't know that. It occurred to me later that my experience was not unlike what many people in this country every day face, which is I was interacting with law enforcement officers. I had no way of measuring their intent. I did not speak their language. I did not know the law. I just knew that I had made them unhappy, and I didn't really know how I was going to make them unhappy, you know, un-unhappy. And it occurred to me at that point, and I had been in police work about 20 years then. I had always tried to be fair and just and all those things, you know, all those good things. And I realized right then that that was one of the first times in my adult life that I had been ever on the receiving end of power. I had always thought I was just and fair, but I was just and fair because I chose to be. And I realized that the people that I deal with were dependent on how I treated them. And that was the situation that I was in Saudi Arabia. Well, Tyler's work on legitimacy expands on that. And he said that it's really not, if you stop somebody for a traffic ticket, for example, it's the person may or may not get the ticket. They may or may not believe that they deserve the ticket. What they really care about is how did the officer treat them during that stop? Was there, do they believe that the officer really stopped them for the traffic ticket? Do they really, did they feel that the officer treated them with respect? Did the officer explain them? All of these things promote this concept of legitimacy. And we try very hard in the cops office. We have been very big proponents about bringing this message of legitimacy and what Professor Tyler calls procedural justice to the community, making law enforcement aware of it, making law enforcement aware of how important it is. And I think particularly as our society becomes more and more diverse, that concept is going to become more and more critical.
What does the future hold for the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services? We will ask its director, Bernard Malekian, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.